Headlines.
From Washington, D.C., the capital of the divided states of America, it's time for the show that brings you both sides of the issues that matter. In the left corner, I'm political analyst and progressive Democrat Garland Nixon.
And in the right corner, I'm investigative journalist and Trump supporter Lee Stranahan.
Welcome to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Today we have three rounds of excitement where we take apart the important issues of the day. In round one, President Trump reverses course on China and seems to be stalled on a decision about the Paris Climate Accords. Once again, the Jared Kushner, Gary Cohn, Steve Bannon ideological feud manifests itself in real time. Has the Trump anti-globalist agenda washed ashore on the beaches of Shanghai? In round two, Arkansas plans to execute 8 people in 11 days, and their plans have run into some legal complications. Lee and I will have a debate and make a decision once and for all on the future of the death penalty in America. And last but not least, in round three, in many states, smoking weed is illegal. But then again, so is the music on your iPod. The buzz about weed is high in the nation's capital because today is April 20th, or as those in the weed culture proudly proclaim, 420. Marijuana celebrations abound in D.C. as polls show that an overwhelming majority of Americans support legalization. What about Lee and I? Stick around for round three to find out. In private conversations, Lee, it's being reported that a number of Donald Trump's friends, President Trump's friends, have told him he could be more popular and accomplish more. You're going to love this. If he embraced a moderate streak and listened to his business friends.
Yeah, I love that. I love that term moderate, by the way. That's the term that's getting used to throw around. Globalist now means moderate.
Yeah, Jared Kushner is a particular names of the moderates, or Jared Kushner is trying to orchestrate more power for his New York business types, such as Gary Cohn. And it's being reported that he's attempting, and this is going to shock you. This is, you're going to find this absolutely shocking, that he's trying to diminish the power of chief strategist Steve Bannon. So let me tell you right off, my first thought, Lee. My first thought is, here's the difference between Garland and Lee. And I think you're going to get where I am. I believe I have faith in you, Lee, that you're going to get as cynical as I am. So over here on the left as a progressive Bernie guy, way back in the beginning of this thing, way back when, I thought to myself, I can go with Hillary Clinton. If she wins, whoever wins, I'm good. And the more I examined it, the more I realized I can't go with Hillary Clinton. She's just lying to me. She's just a neocon. She's everything I don't want.
Okay, that's a good instinct. So far, good. That's a good instinct so far.
That's undeniable as far as the progressives are concerned, Bernie people. Okay. I think that you, my friend, will find that you've had a slice of the same pie. It's just a matter of how I'm waiting for you here with open arms to give you a big hug, Lee. But at some point, I think you're going to wake up and realize that you elected Hillary Clinton, that you're going to have the globalist business. Jared Kushner and his friends are Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton was fully funded by the buddies and pals on Wall Street.
Goldman Sachs.
Yeah. Gary Cohn would have been there. It doesn't matter who. And if he holds sway, which so far, let's be honest, Donald Trump is not going with Steve Bannon. 90% of his agenda is Jared Kushner. And here's a guy, Kushner and Cohn, and here's a guy who said, I'm going to get rid of the IMF. Man, getting rid of the IMF. Changed my mind. Oh, well, you know what? China's a currency manipulator. Well, now that I think about it, they're not a currency manipulator. You, my friend, have been had at least. I walked away before Hillary Clinton had a chance to renege on all the promises, well, that she was going to renege on.
Okay, a few big points here. First off, the hug thing is disturbing, especially since Bill O'Reilly was just let go by Fox last night. So I'm just saying you might want to watch that, Garland.
It ain't that kind of hug, man.
Bill O'Reilly said.
It's like the old Bud advertisements. I love you, man. That's what it is, man. It's like an old Bud Light advertisement. Just look at it like that. What's up?
The new that's what she said will be that's what Bill O'Reilly said. That's the new version. That's what she said, but that's what Bill O'Reilly said. It always starts with that. And I won't take the candy and I won't get in your van. Now, here's the next point. Look, this is disturbing. Donald Trump is clearly better than Hillary Clinton would have been. So for instance, the fact that Neil Gorsuch is the Supreme Court justice is a big deal for the future of the country. And Hillary Clinton would have nominated and put in there somebody awful. So this is better. Now, am I concerned about Gary Cohn? Absolutely. Am I concerned? You mentioned a couple things. I'm going to briefly go over those and add a couple, then we can talk about. So China, I am concerned about President Trump's reversal on China. I am concerned about President Trump weakening NAFTA. Forgive me. Weakening his resolve to end NAFTA. Forgive me. This is really important. And I don't want to screw this up. NAFTA is bad. It's exactly the kind of trade deal we don't need. It's a TPP-style deal. It's worked out bad for the American worker. Donald Trump ran on being tough on China. Donald Trump has been talking tough on China for years. He was talking tough on NAFTA for years. He was talking tough on this Paris climate change deal, which he's now watering down his opposition to. So on a number of these areas, yes, I'm concerned about that. However, the reason I don't get depressed, and this is a big deal, is the reason I don't get depressed about this stuff is because I am an activist. So I'm a journalist. And when I do the journalism thing, I keep it factual and I keep it honest. But as an activist, unlike most people in the media, I don't pretend I don't have opinions. Everyone in the media has got opinions. If you get into the media, it's because you are interested in politics, right? That's what people get into. So a guy like Jake Tapper, whoever, he wants to pretend he's objective. He's not objective. He's got an opinion. Just admit it. Just say you've got an opinion, right? That's my view. Now, I'm an activist. So I think when Trump people figure out who Gary Cohn is, the agenda he's pushing, which is, again, Gary Cohn, registered Democrat, he is a Hillary supporter. So you talked about Hillary. He is a Hillary supporter.
Yes, he is.
Registered Democrat. When Trump people realize that Gary Cohn's hoodwinked them, they've been bamboozled, led astray, right?
When they
realize that, there's going to be a revolt. And when Donald Trump realizes he's cut off from people right now, right? And so when he realizes that his base is not happy, I have enough faith in Donald Trump, who I do not believe this was a setup. I believe that he's getting bad advice from people. Let me ask you this, Garland. Let me take this on. I was talking to my son about this today. I know why Steve Bannon's in the administration. Let me say this. I know this because I'm friends with Steve. Steve Bannon's in the administration, whether you agree with him or disagree with him, because he has a set of beliefs about populism and America first nationalism. And he wants to see that agenda filled out. Okay, does that make sense? In other words, I know why Steve's in the administration. Mm-hmm. Why is Gary Cohn in the Trump administration?
See, and this is where I got to touch on what you said. You said, okay, Jared Kushner's a Democrat. Jared Kushner, Gary Cohn's a Democrat.
Gary Cohn clearly is a Democrat.
Yeah, so here's my position. What you got to grasp here is if you are just a regular old guy out here, you're just a working stiff trying to make a living, right?
Which I am. Technically, right. By the way.
Right, you and me both. Okay.
Right.
So you're out here doing your thing day to day, making a living, paying bills, raising families, whatever you're doing, right? And you see Donald Trump as a guy who identifies with you as opposed to Gary Cohn, you are a sucker. He is a billionaire first.
No, I don't agree. I don't agree.
Well, see, this is my position. And when it comes down to it, he ain't siding with you. He's siding with Gary Cohn, and he's siding with Kushner, and he's siding with the billionaires.
It's not about ideology. And if he does that, he's going to be a failed one-term president. This is my point. Politically, Cohn and Kushner are pushing Donald Trump into political suicide, and they don't care. But if that happens, here are two things. Number one, if that happens, which the tale has not been written yet, you know what I mean? It's very hard. You cannot judge the Trump administration. We're not even at the first 100 days yet. You cannot judge the Trump administration. It ain't over till it's over.
Now, you've got to admit, the course that he has taken, he has veered far from his campaign rhetoric on so many issues.
On
that
some
you
issues,
have to surmise some critical issues that he stood pat for, that he absolutely ran on as part of his platform. He hasn't strayed from those issues. He has absolutely reversed on those issues. And you have to believe. I mean, let's drill down on.
Let's talk about China, for instance.
Okay.
During the campaign, Trump said a number of times. The first day.
Sorry to cut you off, but I just had to throw
that.
He said he was going to label them a currency manipulator the first day.
Yes. He also said that their MO is to cheat. He also said that China's is raping. That's the phrase he used, is raping the United States economically. And Trump's rhetoric on that, every time it happened, it got cheers. Now, let me talk about something we haven't gotten into yet. Let's talk about the princess. Let's talk about Ivanka for a second. The fact that Ivanka Trump, and this is, I have this up at thepopulist.us. I have a story I'm working on there. I was researching this last night. So here's two things. Number one, the value of Ivanka's Trump brands has gone up. In other words, she has fashion brands and stuff like that. Why has it gone up?
China.
That's exactly right.
They call her like a princess. She has this gigantic fan club in China. A lot of people don't even know that. She has this huge fan club in China.
By the way, I do too. Now let's...
I don't have a fan club anywhere.
I don't have a fan club in China, by the way, just so you know. But she does have this. Now, here's the thing. I don't see how that's not a conflict in the following sense. If Trump... I don't see how Trump can do policy on China and risk... This is the art of the deal with Trump here is you have to be willing to walk away from the table. Does that make sense?
Like, yes.
Part of his principle is be willing to walk away from the table.
That's the Stephen Covey stuff, too. That's win-win or no deal. That's the Stephen Covey, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, the same thing.
That's
win-win
right.
or no deal.
That's right. Now, I don't see... When his daughter's got a huge financial interest in her fan base in China, I do not understand how the president can effectively barter with China, knowing that if he gets on their bad side, it's going to hurt his daughter's brand. That seems to me like a major conflict of interest, especially for somebody who's an America First guy. I found a quote. Let's talk more about China.
He's a Trump family first guy.
Well, let's talk about Gary Cohn for a second. Gary Cohn's the advisor who came in. He's a registered Democrat, right?
He's just another Wall Street neoliberal.
He's a
look up the word neoliberal if you don't know what it is.
No, he is, and I pointed that out. He's not the kind of Democrat who a lot of working-class Democrats don't identify with a guy like Gary Cohn. Now, I found video last night, and it's from last year. It's from about a year ago. And Gary Cohn said, you can't just look at, I'm paraphrasing, but it's very close. You can't just look at the United States as having economic growth. China has to have economic growth, too. You have to have that. And I'm like, wow, this is not an America First message. But this is what I'm saying. I believe that Donald Trump, because people are asking me this. Some people,
it's a globalist message. It is a globalist message.
It's 100% a globalist message.
Absolutely.
And by the way,
that's who he is.
This was on the Goldman Sachs website, okay? Why was Gary Cohn saying that? The reason he's saying it is because Goldman Sachs, if you watch the whole video, clearly Goldman Sachs has a lot of investment in China. And this goes back to what I asked before. Let's go back to what I asked before. Why is Gary Cohn in the Trump administration? He had a hugely paying job. He is not on board with Trump's ideology. See, this is what I'm saying about Bannon.
You think he isn't.
No.
I believe he is, economically.
Then you can't explain why Bannon's in there.
Well, see, here's the thing. I think Trump does have a somewhat of a nationalistic streak in him.
Clearly. That's what I'm saying.
In the same way that Garland, as an ACLU board member, has a libertarian streak in him. But it's real little.
No, it's there. No, I don't agree. I think the problem, look, who's winning?
Since we only got our time, I'll throw it back to you, but I got to read this. This is important. China's foreign ministry is defending a decision to grant Ivanka Trump new trademark rights for her line of handbags, jewelry, and spa services. The three new trademarks were approved April 6th, while the president's daughter and her husband, Jared Kushner, sat next to Chinese President Xi Jinping and his wife at dinner at President Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida. What we're having, Kushner is there, and he is just another one of the Wall Street. I don't know if he's a billionaire or not, but guarantee you this, if he ain't, he sure will be by the time he gets out of this White House.
Let me add one thing on China, too. I was talking to a friend of mine today, and they pointed out, and this is important history, and it's true, but I thought it was a good point, so I don't want to take credit that, like, I was thinking about this on my own. Now, what some people are going to argue is that what we're getting from China is cooperation on North Korea, okay? Now, one of the problems that Americans have broadly is that they don't know history. I just don't know how else to say it. They don't really know history. So, if you, and this is part of our problem with dealing with radical Islamic terrorism, if people understood what's going on with the Saudis, they'd understand that better. Now, on China and North Korea. North Korea, the reason China's not going to roll over on North Korea goes back decades.
Right.
Decades. It goes back to the Communist Revolution in China, when part of the reason the Chinese won was they had massive support from Korea.
Korea at the time, which was no North or South Korea. And I always bring this up. Let's not forget, the last time we were at war with North Korea, whose side did China take? Don't forget that.
That's exactly right. And so what I'm saying is I think China is smart enough to be making noises. But the fact is this bond between China and Korea, which is now North Korea, because that's people who defended the communist. Anybody should look it up. Again, we try to make you smarter here, but look, don't take our word for it. Look up that history yourself and ask yourself, China is not a, you know, the United States is a new country, you know, less than 250 years old, right? China, little older.
Just a little.
A little bit older.
But the other part
same,
of it
same
is
with
this.
Korea, by the way.
The other part of it is this. Don't forget, China views North Korea as a buffer. They are a communist country.
Yes.
China, they call themselves communist, but if you really look at it now, they're state capitalist. But they call themselves communist. But the fact of the matter is this. They still view North Korea as somewhat of an ally and a buffer between the capitalist South Korea. Even though they don't really see a possibility of going to war with us, in the remote chance that there was, they want that buffer. And so let's not imagine that they're going to somehow side with us against North Korea and they're going to do away with that buffer.
But let me go back to why I'm not depressed, though, because we only have a couple minutes left in the segment. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan here on Radio Sputnik. The reason that I'm not depressed about this is because we have a weapon to use with Donald Trump here, which is the truth. The fact is his supporters, by and large, when they figure out that they're being sold down the river, won't like it. And Donald Trump, at the end of the day, does care what people think about him. That's why the thing you said at the very beginning, that they're playing Donald Trump. They're playing him. They're playing him on this idea that, like, you're going to be more popular.
I don't think he's being
played. He's not going to be more popular.
I think when you look at it.
No, he's being played.
When you look at it as opposed to ideology, we're looking at an issue of class, and that he's going to side with the billionaires. Ultimately, the billionaires always side with the billionaires.
Of course, it's class warfare to you. And what I'm saying is, as a conservative and a Christian, by the way, I believe in free will, right? And I believe that Donald Trump is not an ideologue. That's everybody knows that about him. And he's being led in the wrong direction and being led in the wrong direction by people close to him, like his daughter Ivanka, like Jared Kushner, and by people like Gary Cohn, who, whatever I think of his ideology, is a substantial, intelligent person.
You're listening to Fault Lines in round two. We're going to talk about a possibility of 8 executions in 11 days in Arkansas. This is Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Lines.
We are back with round two of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. This is Lee Stranahan.
And I'm Garland Nixon.
In Arkansas, they scheduled a number of executions. The number keeps going down. It was originally 8. And by the way, if you're one of my listeners, no Clintons. Stop. Get that out of your head. There are no Clintons being executed. Stop it. It's wrong. Now, here's the thing. There are 8 executions that were scheduled. Then that number has been dropped down to 6 because one person got a stay. Then there have been court decisions, back and forth court decisions. The reason that they're doing these executions, by the way, now they haven't done any executions in Arkansas in a couple of years, but the reason they're doing these now is because the drugs that they're using, the lethal injection drugs, some of them are about to expire, which, by the way, I guess I know what that means, but it's one of the weird things about the death penalty.
Injection drugs expire, somebody could get hurt. You know,
exactly right.
Them.
That's right. That's what I'm
somebody
saying.
Somebody could get sick or something. They could cause, you know, they have unhealthy and unpleasant side effects if you use lethal injection drugs after they expire.
Yes. And by the way, that gets into one of the moral weirdness things of so the idea is that it would be bad because then the lethal injection drug would hurt the person. And so then the question becomes, if you're going to kill somebody, how worried are you about killing them? I mean, it's a cruel and unusual punishment thing, but we'll talk about the wider issue in a second. But these drugs are about to expire. Now, those drugs, let's talk about those for a second, because it's a weird thing about these lethal injection drugs. I know, Garland, it seems like there would be a market opportunity for just the lethal injection drug, but there isn't one. They have to make this drug up. It's a cocktail.
Right. Of drugs that are used for actual medical purposes.
And when you, right, exactly right. And so when you hear cocktail, this is like unhappy hour, I guess what it's for. It's unhappy hour. So it's a cocktail. It's a mix of different drugs. And one of the lawsuits that's actually stopped these executions is that the drug manufacturers have said, hey, we think our drugs are being used, and we don't want our drugs being used, so we're filing suit. So that's another little wrinkle
but
here.
But you got to add, because they do have a valid argument, because they've been winning, because what they say is this, look, we didn't make it, it's not intended for this, and we're concerned that people who are opposed to this, it's going to give us bad press, it's going to cost us money, people are going to divest, people have already told us they're going to, you know, protest. So they've been able to demonstrate to the courts that they have a legitimate financial argument here. They didn't just throw that out there. They have been able to demonstrate that they have a legitimate financial argument.
Which, by the way, gives reason to use, let's say, a firing squad if you're going to have the death penalty over these lethal injection drugs, because you never have bullet manufacturers go, well, we're worried this is going to give us a bad name. Don't use our bullets. They just think people know what bullets are for. So that's one of the wrinkles in this whole thing. The fact that they haven't had any executions in a couple of years. Now, here's what I don't want to get into, because it's just not that interesting to me on the face of it. The guilt or innocence of the people involved. I'll talk about the broad issue in a second. But let's go. I'm going to go with the assumption here for rhetorical purposes. I'm going to go with the assumption that the people on death row are bad people. I'm going to go with that assumption. And this may surprise you, Garland, but I am not an advocate of the death penalty. And there's a few reasons.
You're right. It surprises me.
And I'm a law and order. I'm an advocate of law and order. But the first and foremost reasons I'm not an advocate of the death penalty is I don't like putting that power in the hands of the state. It bothers me. And it bothers me for a number of reasons. And let me talk about Franklin Delano Roosevelt. This goes back a long time. This is ancient history, obviously, right? But there was a guy who attempted to assassinate FDR. And he was put to death. And it was kind of amazing because the way our court system works now, when I was researching this, it had to do with Saul Alinsky and the mob. This is what I was researching, and I found out about this guy. He was put to death in like 6 months. It was amazing. Like from the time the crime happened mm-hmm. to the time that dude was dead, 6 months went by. Timothy McVeigh, the Oklahoma City bomber, that was quick. That dude was killed very quick. And again, not defending Timothy McVeigh in any way, shape, or form at all. But you know what? When those things happen, I'm a conservative. That means I don't like big government, and I'm distrustful of the state. In fact, I think you're the one who should be in favor of the death penalty because you love the state so much. Me, I'm iffy on the state, right? As a progressive, you love big government. Me, I don't like it, and therefore, I don't like putting that power in the hands of the state, even when, and I got to say this, even when people deserve it. There are clearly people who morally deserve, they don't.
The most severe punishment.
They deserve the most severe punishment. That's not, that. So to me, that's not an issue. There are people who do horrible things to kids and kill them, just stuff like that. Great. It's horrible. Yes. I agree. That being said, now here's the other practical argument, is what we're seeing in Arkansas right now. Whenever you have the death penalty, I don't like it ideologically because I don't like putting that power in the state. Practically, it takes so frickin' long to do it because there's stays and this and that and everything else that at a certain point, practically, I'm also like, well, I don't know what we're really accomplishing here. So I'm not, like I say, I'm a law and order advocate. I have this position and it's not contradictory to me. I'm in favor of law and order, but I'm not big at all on the death penalty. I'm not in favor of it. And I wish they'd figure out another system where people can be punished, stay punished, and that goes on. And I do think that for certain, and by the way, and this gets into another area, and I do think actually for certain crimes, and child molestation would be an example, because I think there's pretty clear evidence that people don't recover from, I don't know else to say, people don't recover from that. That there should be something where people like go away to an island or something like that. You know what I mean? Like we just, you can't know. You lost your people privileges.
They've got those Supermax places. Well, this may interest you to know. The first time that I ever went on radio, live radio, was representing the ACLU in Baltimore at a conservative station to talk about the death penalty. And this was my position on the death penalty. You know, there's a guy, and I'll go with this first. There was a guy I had on my show. The guy's name is Kirk Bloodsworth. Kirk Bloodsworth, it's interesting that you talk about doing something to a child. Kirk Bloodsworth was from the Eastern Shore. He moved to Baltimore, poor guy, white guy, kind of farm boy, grew up, right? He goes to the, he gets married, he gets a job, he's 22. Police knock on his day, on his door one day and drag him off and accuse him of the rape and murder of a 10-year-old girl, which he did not do. Okay. They take him to court. They convict him and put him on, give him the death penalty. He's in jail 8 years and 11 months. After 8 years and 11 months, guess what happens? Somebody, his lawyer and his friends read something about this new technology called DNA evidence.
Yep. Yep.
They contact the court and they say, we don't know where they, nah, sorry, there's no evidence. And someone's walking down the hall and they happen to mention it. And somebody goes, oh yeah, the evidence's still around. I know where it is. The judge put it in a closet. So it, just by happenstance, someone happened to hear someone else talking about the case, remembered the case and said, I know. Otherwise they'd never find this evidence. This guy's done, right?
Well, and that's it. Look, this is another big moral argument against it, which is this happened, the DNA project.
Right.
The Innocence Project.
Right. So what happens? So because they're lucky enough to find it, they get the evidence, they do the test, they find out not only is it not Kirk, it was another guy who the police picked up and suspected in a crime and let go. And the guy actually was in the same prison in a different block with Kirk for another sexually related crime. So this guy is, so Kirk Bloodsworth in Maryland, I've met him, he's a wonderful guy, was the first person in America who was released, who got the death penalty and was released from prison because of DNA evidence. Now, here's the issue with that. There are a lot of instances where there is no DNA evidence. So here's my position. Let me sum it up on the death penalty. It's better to give everyone life without parole. Right. Everybody who's convicted who would get the death penalty, to give them life without parole than it is to execute one innocent person, one innocent American, one innocent Kirk Bloodsworth, one innocent, hardworking guy who's accused. We would be far better to let everyone else get life without parole. And here's why. Because you can let them go. If they'd have guessed Kirk, they'd just say, oops. And what we found with the Innocence Project and another thing, and a number of other organizations in Illinois a few years ago, they had like 113 people on death row. They did investigations. They found 13 of them didn't even do it. They were all on death row. So my position is this. Number one, my position is we should not sacrifice a few innocent people just to get the guilty ones, because there is no other alternative, because we're never going to get them all. Number one. Number two, I lost track. It doesn't matter. The bottom line,
number one was good enough. Yeah, that's the idea. All you need.
That's it. We shouldn't execute people who, I've got it. This is the great finishing touch. This is the way I finished on that show. And I said, and anyone who says, I don't mind if we execute a few innocent people every now and then just to make sure we get the guilty ones, volunteer a member of your family. Volunteer one of your son, your wife, your daughter, your brother, your cousin. Volunteer a member of your family and say, or yourself, and say, I'm willing to sacrifice a member of my family so that we can get all these other guilty ones. Because if you're not willing to give up a member of your family, don't ask somebody else to give up a member of theirs.
Well, I'm a filmmaker, too, and I make documentaries. One of my favorite documentaries, which I would recommend everybody see, is Errol Morris's Thin Blue Line. It was a pivotal documentary in the history of documentaries for a few reasons. Number one, the aesthetic of it. It's a good-looking documentary. The recreations are shot. It's an iconic documentary. The recreations are shot beautifully. The music, it's a score by Philip Glass, and it's a beautiful score. But the point of the film, by the way, Errol Morris, you know what he does a lot now, by the way?
No.
Apple commercials.
Oh, wow.
That's what he
well paid, then, that's for sure.
That's how you make money in that game. So, but Errol Morris's Thin Blue Line, it's the story of a guy who was arrested in Texas for a murder. He'd picked up a hitchhiker. It was the hitchhiker who'd done the murder, but they arrested this guy. But one of the pivotal things in that, and this is what people need to understand about the justice system, is and I'm paraphrasing it here. It's been a few years since I watched the film, but I've seen it a number of times. One of the pivotal points in the film is a prosecutor in Texas said, look, he said, this prosecutor who tried the case said, any lawyer can convict a guilty man. But a real prosecutor, a real talented prosecutor, can convict an innocent one. I'm going to say that again. This was a.
Now, there's a guy that I may vote for the death penalty if I'm on his jury.
Well, this was a point of pride for the prosecutor. Yeah. Was that I'm so good that that I can convict a guy who's innocent.
It's an amoral position.
I'll go a little further. It's an immoral position. I'll go a little bit further. It's immoral. And I think that's what people need to understand in some of these cases. Now, again, I say this not as a bleeding heart anything. There are people, this is not a question of people deserving to die, whatever that means. Yeah, that's a whole other issue. But it's not an issue to me of people deserving to die. Criminals deserve to be punished severely, period. That's true. But once you have the system, when you actually look at it, and like you say, the Innocence Project, the whole purpose of our criminal justice system should be to avoid mistakes like that. Now, well, let me say one other thing. Let me just get into a point of possible disagreement. But I also hate it when groups like Amnesty International or groups like that with a clearly leftist agenda attack the United States. I'll repeat what I said before. I think I have a position that's completely consistent on this because I am not in favor of government power. Leftists, on the other hand, I mean, let's go over this. Who kills, we think, more people? And the reason I say we think is we don't know. Do you know what country kills more people than anybody on the face of the earth right now, but we don't know it because they don't keep records? Do you know who?
Sweden. Just throwing it out there.
No. China. They think right now that China's killing thousands of people per year. That's what they think. But China doesn't keep records because it's a quote-unquote state secret, right? Now, by the way, I guarantee you President Trump didn't bring that up with China's president, right? I guarantee you he didn't bring it up.
He was working on a deal for purses with Ivanka. He didn't really have time, you know, to get into those kind of details.
And I guarantee you he didn't bring up the public beheadings that they have.
In Saudi Arabia?
In the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
Never touch Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is untouchable. That is, you know, it's funny. We talk about, we're getting sidetracked, but we talk about the Taliban in Afghanistan, the most horrible repressive regime. The Taliban basically they're basically almost identical to Saudi Arabia.
This is a topic we don't have time. There's only a couple minutes left in this segment. Again, you're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan here on Radio Sputnik. We should get into this topic, though, because I just read a fantastic article in Politico magazine about how the victims of 9/11 are trying to sue Saudi Arabia, right? The families of the victims of 9/11 are trying to sue Saudi Arabia. And this is a fantastic article that shows how, unfortunately, the Trump administration, this really bothers me, the Trump administration is following in the Obama administration's footsteps and protecting the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And the article is about 5,000 words, probably,
because that
fantastically
kind of power,
detailed.
You know, and here's the thing that has to show you to me. It's just like we're losing track here, but it's just like when we talk about the Cohn and the Wall Street and the Goldman Sachs people. You know, at some point, we who are, you know, call ourselves conservative or progressives or something, have to understand that there are some issues that the powerful people, the people with the real money and the real power,
100% agree, yes,
go, that have nothing to do with ideology, that we can stand here and argue about them all day long. They could care less because they're making a fortune off of these issues.
You say we're off track a little. I don't think we're off track. Here's the point. This is exactly why I say I don't like this power in the hands of the state, because I don't trust the state. I believe it's clear that these big moneyed interests, right, and their political partners, that's what lobbying money's about. I don't want it to switch from, we have the death penalty for this child molester, we have the death penalty for this murderer, to suddenly we have the death penalty, as they do in places like China and Saudi Arabia, for things like speaking or saying the wrong thing.
The sedition laws were back. Or, you know, this whole fake news thing. Well, there, Lee, you know, we've decided that the populist is fake news. Lean over right here and put your head beside the basket.
Yeah, no, and that really is what, and that's why I say I don't like that power in the hands of the state. This is exactly why, because the state gets to determine who's committed the offenses that are death penalty worthy. And that is my big concern. So, no, I think it does relate. Look, and like I say, I think if we're going to, so, but I don't like it when Amnesty International, look, they do a good job because they do point out China and they do point out these other countries. But I don't like it when they act like the problem. The problem to me is state power. That's the ultimate problem here, is state power. And I wish these leftist groups who call this stuff out would identify what the problem is. The problem is too much state power. They don't want to shrink the state. They want to grow it. And that's what really concerns me.
Well, at least we've come to some kind of conclusion and we have resolved the issue of the death penalty. My name's Garland.
Thank goodness.
Now, my name's Garland Nixon. Of course, you know my partner there, Lee something or other. I'm not sure. But we've come to a conclusion. We shouldn't have the death penalty in America for very, very different reasons. You are listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
The location is Oakland, California in the early 1970s. A group of San Rafael High School, Marin County, California high school kids, they called themselves the Waldos, and they would meet every evening at 4:20 p.m. to smoke a little bit of weed. They're out of school, their parents still weren't home, and it gave them a window of unsupervised freedom for them to have a little bit of fun. The 4:20 time became a code for them to use in front of their unsuspecting parents. Before you know it, the term 420 spread across California. Many people think there was Grateful Dead followers that started to use it a lot. And the California Senate bill that established the state's medical marijuana program was actually SB 420. But now, 420, it's turned into April the 20th, and now it is a celebration of the marijuana culture. So how about this? A new Quinnipiac poll released last week found that 71% of Americans would oppose a federal crackdown on legal marijuana, and 93% are in favor of at least medical marijuana. Things are really changing. A couple of weeks ago, White House spokesman Sean Spicer, actually about a month ago, Sean Spicer said that he saw greater enforcement of recreational marijuana states. I really don't think so. I don't think that's happening. The numbers simply say that it's political suicide to do that. I think that the fact of the matter, here's the other part of it, too. There have been some people who have projected marijuana sales to be upwards of $50 billion by 2025, 2026. There's real money here. There's real jobs here. People, it actually saves taxpayers money. There's real numbers here because you're not putting people in jail and people can still stay out and be productive in society. So there are a lot of real, logical, valuable reasons besides just, the moral arguments we could make why it doesn't make sense. And the fact of the matter is, I think we're seeing a real turn in the numbers where so many people are in favor of it. I think there's no turning back. Jeff Sessions, I got some real issues with Jeff Sessions. Now, Lee and I disagree on Jeff Sessions for a number of reasons, but Jeff Sessions was surprised Thursday. He said he was shocked that not very many people agreed with his position on marijuana, on the legalization of marijuana. He said, when they nominated me for attorney general, you would have thought the biggest issue in America was when I said, I don't think America's going to be a better place if they sell marijuana at every grocery store. People didn't like that. I'm surprised they didn't like that. You, my friend, either haven't been reading the polls, haven't been watching TV, or you're out of touch, because the reality is medical and recreational marijuana is here to stay. And I, though I'm not a user of it, but here's the bottom line. I don't eat meat, and I don't think meat should be illegal. The other thing about it is, and I'm going to throw this over to you and see what you have to say, for a lot of libertarians, and as I said, I have a libertarian streak in me. If you ask me, what do I think should happen with marijuana? So the argument from many people and politicians are, we should legalize it, we should tax it heavily, and we can use that money to fill in the blank. Here's Garland's opinion. We should legalize it, and we shouldn't tax it at all. I don't think we should tax everything. I don't think we should tax marijuana at all. I think we should legalize it, let it be, and if somebody wants to use it, they can use it. If they don't, they don't have to. Lee, what are your thoughts?
Well, this is a good, this will be a good test of how real we want to keep it here. Here's what it is. This complexity is the issue. So first off, I like weed. I've smoked weed, and given an intoxicant of choice, I don't drink, and I would rather smoke marijuana than anything else. That being said, I lived in Texas the last 5-6 years. And I didn't smoke it there because it was illegal. And there
they chopped your head up. Death penalty in Texas.
There were significant penalties
death
for
penalty
it. That's
in
part
Texas.
Of it.
Well, they give you the death penalty for running a stop sign in Texas, actually.
But I've been to Amsterdam a few times, and I lived in Southern California. Now, let me break. So there's the bias up front right there. Now, but let's keep it real. I'm also a parent, okay? And I have kids aged 5 to 30. Now, I will tell you that the argument that marijuana is a gateway drug has some merit to it. And people who are advocates of marijuana like to pretend differently, but that's not true. And so I can say that I have a bias, because also marijuana, when you compare it to other drugs, especially prescription drugs, is less hazardous. In other words,
it's not hazardous at all. You can't take enough to kill yourself.
It's that's one way of gauging hazardedness. That's one way of gauging that word. By the way, I have not smoked before the show.
I was about to say, you've been enjoying 420 already here before the show, Lee.
Not in months. But one way of gauging whether it's a hazard is whether you can overdose on it, which you can't. However, and I will say this as well, the argument that marijuana is more potent today is 100% true. And in particular, these edibles now that people use and that are sold in a lot of places in California, these are so potent that you literally shouldn't. I mean, there's no way you should be. You shouldn't be driving.
Well, they'll knock people flat. I've seen people just edibles. They don't get up off the couch lock. They call it. They can't get up off the couch. That's
exactly right, and that's not a joke. I mean, that's not ha ha. They can't get off.
Oh, they're done. They're fried, toast.
And it's the equivalent of a hallucinogen. Basically, it's more or less the equivalent of a hallucinogen. Now, again, I'm trying to keep things real here. I'm trying to say, look, on one hand, you can't overdose. On the other hand, those edibles are really serious, and people smoking and driving scares me. They shouldn't be doing that, period. There should be penalties for doing that.
Which there already are. So right. That's already addressed in the law. I was a police officer.
But again, I'm just trying to lay this out. Yeah. Now, let me take another thing, medical versus recreational. There are people, and well, let me go bigger for a second here. Let me talk about why Republicans are so opposed to this. Republicans, since the 60s, believe that marijuana, this goes back to the 60s, this goes back to the hippie days. A lot of Republicans, and I'm sure Jeff Sessions is in this category. Do you think Jeff Sessions has done bong hits? I don't, okay? Jeff Sessions, I'm guaranteeing you, is one of those Republicans who believes that marijuana is a gateway drug that leads to liberalism.
Yeah, to hippiness. That's the hippies.
That's exactly right.
That's the hippie drug, man.
That's exactly right. So they are, you could see this in Oliver Stone's film Platoon, mm-hmm. right? There were the beer drinkers and the weed smokers, right? And the weed smokers were more liberal and the military guys were more, right? And I guarantee you Jeff Sessions doesn't want to bring back prohibition, even though alcohol clearly has huge things. Now
they used to use the term "dope smoking hippies."
That's exactly right, and that's what a lot of conservatives issue with it is. And I actually do. I'm sympathetic to that, but that's not necessarily the case. On the other hand, marijuana culture, that's a weird thing, right? Like when your lifestyle and your identity is based on what drug you use, That's a little weird to me. That's a little much, right? Now, on the other hand, another thing conservatives like to do is they like to say, well, medical marijuana, that's just an excuse. There's no medical. That's not true either. And again, I know this because someone close to me had a medical marijuana recommendation when we lived in California. And they did not have cancer. They did not have glaucoma. What they had was anxiety. And for a lot of people, marijuana serves the purpose of chilling them out. It mellows them out. And a lot of people, if they have a stressful day at work, they like to come home. Now, I mean, so let me talk about something else when we talk about compared to prescription drugs. Heath Ledger died from a mix of prescription medication when he wanted to go to sleep and take a nap.
Michael Jackson's death, same thing. He was using that, whatever that drug is that people use, that they use to put people under when they,
Looks like Prince, the same thing. Yeah. It looks like Prince, the same thing.
Yep.
Right. If Heath Ledger had decided to smoke weed,
he'd still be here.
He would still be here now. And again, anybody who's smoked weed, and by the way, when you go to medical marijuana stores, they're very helpful about.
Well, let me throw this in real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things that people need to know: the most money spent lobbying against marijuana legalization is the private prison lobbies, the opioid manufacturers, and the organizations, the fraternal organizations for prison guards. That's all you need to know. There are a lot of people, unfortunately, who saw the drug war as an opportunity to make money by putting people in jail. Now, keep in mind something. Whose money are they making? They're making taxpayer money. You put somebody in jail for weed, it cost as much as sending them to, you know, vine-covered university. So the reality of it is, too, there is the moral issue, the moral argument, and there's the logical and reasonable argument that says if somebody wants to come home and drink a, you know, and drink a beer or drink a couple of beers, they can do it. So if somebody wants to smoke weed, they couldn't. But then there's the other part that says there is real, in real dollars, part of this is a transference of money, of taxpayers' money, into the private prison lobby and into some of these other companies. And of course, the opioid makers are starting to realize that there's been a number of studies that say the states that legalize medical marijuana, that the number of prescriptions for opioids, the number of prescriptions for antidepressants and a number of other drugs goes down, that people don't have to go to the doctor. They don't have to go to some company to get some drug that's going to have side effects. You know, you watch the advertisements where they say, take this, it's good for you, but your feet and legs are going to fall off. That people can choose another, that citizens can choose another option that they want. And so the problem is there are a lot of companies that don't want to lose money. And it's not about helping the patients, and it's not about saving the taxpayer money. It's simply about them putting more money in their pockets.
Well, and let me talk about that opioid thing for example, because here's the other way that it's a gateway drug, and people don't, again, people aren't comfortable talking about this.
And I oppose that, but for the record, I don't think it's a gateway drug, but go
well,
ahead.
Well, no, it clearly is.
Clearly is it.
No, no,
go ahead.
It clearly is. Let me make part of the case why people like me have made it a gateway drug. Unfortunately, even unwittingly, people like me have made it a gateway drug. Here's the problem. Again, I have kids. So the problem is if your line is that marijuana is acceptable, what I've seen is that people's kids then go, well, gee, if marijuana is acceptable, then what else is acceptable? And so you're setting a bar. And this is unfortunate. Again, I'm keeping this very real because I am troubled by this. And I'm troubled by this for myself. And again, you know, I'm trying to be very honest here, but part of that honesty is I would be being dishonest if I were pretending I'm 100% comfortable with my own decisions. I'm not. I'm not 100% comfortable with my own decisions. And I think when you say, well, you know what, marijuana is okay, it is a slippery slope. By the way, I think it's also true, I think drinking to the point of inebriation is a slippery slope. I think that's a gateway drug too. People don't want to talk about that. But booze is a gateway drug as well. I think if you're going to be real about it, the not gateway drug is saying to your kids, I don't get intoxicated. Here's why. We're talking, you don't drink, right?
Right.
We're talking, you don't drink. I don't drink. Now, the reason why is because I've drunk before. I've had drinks before.
Me too.
Right.
I was a police officer, and I remember thinking to myself, man, if I go out here, you know, I got the friends, have some beers, and I thought to myself, I was a responsible person. And though it may seem selfish, a lot of people think like this. They won't admit it. I probably should have thought the moral thing, the right thing would be say, oh, I could hurt somebody. But I guess it was a selfish way of thinking. But here's what I thought. Man, if I go out here and have an accident or something and lose my license, I'll lose my job. That was my thoughts. I will lose my job and then I'm screwed. And I said, I'm not going to do it. And I stopped drinking because I would go to, you go to bars with buddies, you have one beer, it turns into five or six and you're driving home. And I thought, man, I'll be in the newspaper. You know, police officer slams into somebody and then I'm done. They'll give me 20 years and, you know, I'll end up on the wrong side of the bar.
And I'm also, of a certain age too, where I've done coke before when I was like a teenager. I'm of a certain age when Lenny Bias. Yeah, I don't remember this.
Remember the Lenny Bias story? Very well.
A lot of people who are younger, if you're 45, you probably don't remember Lenny Bias. I was actually talking to a celebrity about this, and she stopped doing coke the same time too. Lenny Bias was a guy. He was recruited by the Boston Celtics. He was going to be a Celtic college ball player. I was living in Massachusetts at the time. First time he tried cocaine, died.
He didn't know how much to do, and he died. But the bottom line is, again, if he just smoked weed,
that was the last. I just never have done it since then.
But there's another point to be made here, and you made a good point, and I'm going to put the second part of it. You said, you know, I may not be okay, and you know, I'm not sure if I should be okay with marijuana, or if I should tell my kid what I should tell my kids, et cetera. And a lot of people may have that thought, but here's the difference. There's a difference between the citizen being able to say, you know, I can make a choice. to say to my kids, I don't think you should drink, or I don't think you should smoke, or I don't think you should eat meat, or whatever it is, right? And the government locking people up for it. So I'm fine. I think that the parent, the citizen, et cetera, should have the conversation with his or her children and friends. I think that they should set the example whether they want to smoke or not smoke. I have friends who say, look, if it comes to smoke, my kids are in college. I'd rather have them smoke weed than drink. And which is a valid argument, but I think the person should make that decision. I don't think we should be locking people up for it.
And let me go further with the political ramifications of this. The fact that I just said, for instance, that I had tried coke when I was like 19.
Hard to say you didn't inhale on that one, huh?
But here's what it is, and I find this interesting about our political culture today. Just me saying that, that's now on the radio, right? Mm-hmm. That's now that. If I was trying to run for office, that might be used against me.
I'm holier than thou.
Yes. And
person.
By the way, that bothers me because the fact is, and this is one of the things I thought was great about the Trump election. I think we need to get to the point of not trying to elect
a preacher.
Preachers are okay by me.
I meant that facetiously. What I'm saying is a preacher in that we're trying to elect someone where we can't possibly find anything that they've ever done wrong because you're just going to get a fraud.
Yes.
Instead of a real person who says, I did this or that. Yeah, it's true. And then you can make a decision whether or not they're the person that. But and the other part of it is this. I don't know if you've been around newsrooms or the media, but let me tell you what. A lot of these people who are saying, well, this person shouldn't be elected because they snorted coke and they did this would never pass a drug test.
Well, no, and here's the other thing, too, on this, and I have to, because I mentioned earlier I'm a Christian. So the other aspect that I go back on this is dealing with my Christianity and drugs. I don't have any problem when people come to me who are Christians and say, I don't think that's right. I would never try to argue anybody into, no, you should smoke weed or whatever. You should do that. I really don't try to do that. I respect people who make that choice. But I do agree with you. It's not a decision that I think the government wants to make. I think there's a lot of economic reasons that they want to make it. But this whole, I got to say this, though, I'm going to go back to what I was saying earlier. This whole, like, celebration of 420 and this whole marijuana culture thing, come on. I mean,
they have wine festivals, don't they? They have wine festivals.
But
what's wrong with it?
This ain't that. I mean, this is a big middle finger. Look how hip I am and look how edgy I am. And you know what? It ain't new. Cheech and Chong have been around for 40 or 50 years.
I used to have Cheech and Chong albums back in the day.
I
still think that people, you know, hey, look, if that's what they're into, I think people should be able to celebrate it and do whatever they want. And guess what? They're going to be doing it the next couple of days. There's going to be a big festival at RFK. I may be one of the speakers.
What I'm saying is they're trying too hard. They're trying too hard. And that's what bothers me. So hopefully, like I say, I mean, the thing is, this is one of those issues where what I would like to see from people is the ability to have, which I think we were able to have, Garland. I think you and I were able to have this. We had an actual nuanced discussion where we can say, this is good, this is bad, and I'd like to see more of that and less of this grandstanding. That's what I'd like to see.
Nothing wrong with that. Once again, you're listening to the Fault Lines. We're on every day at 4, and you can go to Spreaker app and any number of places. You can go to Sputnik Radio and check us out. You're listening to the Fault Lines. I'll see you tomorrow. Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.